accession number 17583, Reel 2.
Major Day, Reel 2.
The back end of 1941, we'd mobilised in Secunderabad, ready to go to Western Desert, in a division called 19 Div. At that time, 17 Div was being formed in Burma, and then with, as we all know from history, the sudden Japanese onslaught caught us basically all with our pants down, and the division in Burma, which was a very weak one, had to be augmented. The divisional commander in Burma, a general called Pete Rees, fell getting out of an aeroplane, as far as I remember, and broke his ankle, was shipped back to India, and he took over 19 Div in Secunderabad, and Jackie Smyers, our divisional commander, went out to take over 17 Div in Burma. And when he arrived there, he looked at the situation and decided he had to have at least one regular Gurkha brigade, and 48 brigade from 19 Div in Secunderabad was shifted out at very short notice to Burma. We were three regular battalions, very regular battalions, 1st, 3rd, 2nd, 5th, and 1st, 4th. Very, very few non-regular soldiers amongst us. Probably limited to a handful of ECOs like myself. But we had been training for the Western Desert. We were not equipped for Burma, and we arrived. Officers were out in their pistols, because our pistols had all gone to North Africa. There was a shortage. We arrived out in the pistols, and I was the only chap in the brigade that had handled Bren guns. It really was a bit of a nonsense. Our equipment was the khaki drill of peacetime India. Our underclothes and whatnot were all white cotton. And so we had a bright idea when we arrived in Rangoon and went into camp. The Japanese had not attacked Burma yet. Went into camp. We boiled up big billies, dictures of tea, and we boiled all our white underclothes, or soaked all our white underclothes in strong tea. And when they dried out, they were all a dirty brown colour, and the idea served its purpose. We then were outside Rangoon for some time until our mules and heavy kit arrived, and then we started to move down towards the Thai border. By that stage, the existing part of 17 Div, which was about two brigades, was strung out over miles and miles of border, running right down to the Tenasserim Peninsula, Moulmein, Martaban. In retrospect, one of the most ridiculous things you would ever think of, and a recipe for disaster. But everybody's got to remember, in those days, the British Empire did not give up territory willingly or without a fight. So whilst the sensible thing might have been, even then, to have abandoned the whole of Lower Burma and given ourselves time to set up a defence line with Rangoon at our backs and supplies readily available, it wasn't to be, and certainly nobody would have expected it to happen. As a result of that, when the Japs struck, troops were cut off all over the place in penny packets, had to fight their way back, and we went up to the Bilin River in considerable haste as a brigade, and we launched a really fearsome counterattack against the Japanese advance. It stopped the Jap dead in his tracks. He was meeting not only fresh troops, but first-class troops, highly trained regular troops, and we pushed him back a long way. My own battalion, we had one company that failed to get forward because it was pinned down, but the other companies, certainly my company, we got forward about 3 miles and pushed the Jap back in that particular front into the Bilin River. We've learned subsequently that it so shook the Japanese general that he had decided to call off his plans for further advances and await the arrival of another division. Sadly, the whole of the value of what had occurred was lost by the fact that a message in clear was sent forward from divisional headquarters on the ordinary civil telephone system to the forward troops. I'll explain this in a minute. To the forward troops, calling for a rapid withdrawal from that flank towards the Satang Bridge. And the Japanese picked up this message in clear, and instead of awaiting the arrival of the next another division, by which time we would have got back to the Satang and consolidated there and might even have held that front, the whole thing turned into a chaotic retreat to the Satang.
Can you tell me in detail what was your own part in that action on the Bilin River?
Well, I was the leading... We had two companies up. I was the leading right-hand company. And we succeeded in, we really hammered the Jap. We pushed him back. He suffered pretty heavy casualties. My casualties were very light. We held that position for probably a couple of days. But at the end of the second day, because the Jap was infested the whole area, I was very short of direct contact with battalion headquarters. We managed to hold on, and finally we were ordered back to conform to a line which was going to exist. We were overrun at one stage, where I was personally saved by a knight, Dunlal Gurung, who got the first IOM, certainly of our sector, Indian Order of Merit of our sector. But I am a bit hazy about 24 hours, because when he got me out of the trouble I was in, I had been pretty badly concussed. And my memory, although apparently I carried on, my memory is of that 24 hours is not very clear. We then had to fall back to conform to the line that was being formed behind us.
Could I just interrupt you there, because so I can get a better picture of all this? When you advanced in the first place, what kind of terrain?
The terrain there's the rubber that we had behind us, rains, forests, some hilly country and rubber plantations. From the takeoff point for the attack, there was a bit of scrub jungle, and then a lot of more or less open ground running down in a great bend of the Bilin River. The Bilin River is one of the big rivers in that part of the world, and we were in a sort of semicircle area there. I can remember the names of some of the villages, but they probably won't mean very much. We fought our way forward through networks of nullahs and whatnot, and we chased the Jap back across the river at that one point. He counterattacked very heavily, and we did have a hand-to-hand scrap, and that's when this knight Dunlal got me back. Sadly, in doing so, we were carrying our own packs. We had nothing except what we stood up in. And in doing so, he had to cut my equipment off. And so from then on, I literally had nothing except what I stood up in. We fell back.
When you launched the attack, was it at night time?
No. We launched attack. I think we went in as soon as we arrived. We were moved down in a hurry. And I would suggest we got down there quite early in the morning. And I think that attack was launched certainly before midday. And we bumped the Jap almost immediately, within 100 yards of start line. And I say one company, the company on my left, was very badly held up. They just absolutely walloped by the Jap. But the Jap in front of us gave way, and the instructions were to go for the river, and we went for the river, and we did actually get back to the river bank and hold the river bank again.
What position, what kind of positions were the Japanese in front of you?
On my left flank, they were in fairly heavy wood. I wouldn't call it rainforest, it's scrub jungle. And there was a bit of high ground on the left. On the right, it was fairly flat, open ground. I don't remember much in the way of undergrowth. I think it was, fairly desert-like ground with lots of dried up nullahs, little streams and watercourses that had gone down like fingers into the main river. So the Japs were, as we were indeed, were in these networks of nullahs.
And what was the method of advance of your company against them?
I suppose the classic thing to push forward until you needed extra fire, and then fire. We had no supporting arms. We had no artillery or anything supporting us. We were moving forward, covering ourselves with small arms fire, pushing from one nullah to another. Every now and then we probably had to clean out an area with drawn cookeries, but it best described, I suppose, as a lot of terriers working down nullahs, flushing out foxes.
And were you firing yourself, or...?
I did at one stage. We had an automatic, a Bren gun actually, which I'd lost the Bren gun, and I did use the Bren gun, but not obviously off its bipod, only sort of from the waist.
What was your opinion about the resistance which the Japanese in front of you
put? It was very severe. It was very severe. And the thing, we didn't know then what we were up against, but I know that the first Jap that we killed evoked a certain amount of surprise from the men and from myself, because he was a great big Jap. And we learned later that these were largely people who'd been recruited into this particular division from North Korea. And he was probably a six-footer, which caused a great deal of surprise, quite frankly. No, they fought very hard indeed. They had, to the south, they'd wiped out the Baluchis and that sort of thing they did. We really had a hammering until we put this counterattack in. And then the counterattack, having been successful, was damned forever because of this stupid message sent through in clear.
Did you see your Gurkhas using the kukri?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes. Then and many times. And they use it extremely effectively, too. But when, after this message in clear went through, we had to pull out. The Jap pressure kept up or was intensified. And obviously, as a company commander way up my own forward, I knew nothing about this. But a general retreat was ordered, an orderly retreat, but a fast one, back to the Satung Bridge. The hope of getting back to the Satung Bridge, probably 2 days' march away, or even more. Before the Jap got there, for obvious reasons. It was the one crossing across the Satung River, and it was the last major barrier before Rangoon. So everybody lit off, and communications were very bad, and history says that the 1st, 4th Gurkha were cleverly withdrawn under cover of darkness. And when the Jap attacked in the morning, he merely hit empty space. That is a comment in history which I've never gone along with, because I was actually still holding the position that we'd been holding the previous day. I never received any orders to retreat, And when the Jap attacked in the morning, we had a hell of a flaming attack on our hands. And we stuck it out late afternoon, it may have been. We stuck it out until about 2 o'clock in the morning, when we were holding an area along a bund, the bank, which was enfiladed both sides by a Japanese fire, and we really were pinned down. And a Gurkha from our signal platoon, to this day I don't know what he was doing there, he suddenly arrived, and I discovered from him everybody else had already withdrawn, and I could see no way of getting my company off this bund, which was enfiladed by medium machine guns down both sides. We're going to be absolutely scuppered. And shows you how lacking, perhaps, the allegedly better educated chap can be. It had never occurred to me that I could more or less determine when a belt was being changed on one of these wretched guns. But it had to this young lance corporal from the signal platoon. And he said, what we do, sir, we just wait till a certain time, and then we all go together, and we literally have to run, you know, across this enfiladed place. And that's exactly what happened. And I had great joy about 10 years ago in being back in the hills, and I met a very senior retired Gurkha officer, an honorary captain, Gobadun, I think was his name, who was the lance corporal who had got us and my company out of this very perilous position. And I have no doubt to this day that had it not been for him, I would not have had the capability of doing it myself, because it's something I just didn't think of. The only defense one can have is that we hadn't had any food for several days and one was very tired, but it was entirely due to this young lance corporal who actually, when he knew the belt was about to be trained, he grabbed me by the hand and said, now, and the whole lot of us, I probably had about 100 chaps left by then, we went. And we then had this, we were on our own. Everybody else was obviously well ahead of us. And we were very tired. It was very difficult to keep the men on their feet at times. If we stopped, very difficult to get them up again. And we were stopped on a bend in a rubber estate, short of a place called Chaitu. And I heard a lot of noise coming through the jungle, people moving down the track towards us. And we had precious little ammunition. We were as tired as I've described. And I thought, well, all we can do now is to get into the jungle either side and try and scupper whoever comes down and hope that we can get away safely afterwards. So I scattered the chaps into the jungle or the rubber estate either side of this track and waited near the track myself. And eventually this body of men arrived, and I thought, well, this is it. We haven't got any ammunition. This is where we're going to be scuppered. And round the bend in the track came a chap called Peter Stewart, the 4th 12th Frontier Force, who was one of my best friends. I hadn't seen him for years. Most extraordinary coincidence. And he had a remnants of his company rather than the same way as I'd been cut off. And he decided to go a different way back, and he went his way back, and I went my way back. And we eventually joined up with a mountain artillery battery, and my chaps were falling down, and these mountain gunners, great big batons, PMs and Sikhs, most of them had a Gurkha across his broadside across his shoulders carrying him in. And all the gun mules had Gurkhas slung on the top as top loads, as it were. And something one will never forget, where those gunners, four different castes altogether, different religions, rallied round. I know that very few of my men would have got back without their help. We got back to Chaitu and we had about 12 hours to recover, by which time the men made wonderful recovery. And we then set off on this dreadful march through a trace that the sappers had cut through the jungle, back to Sitang Bridge. It was very dry. Water was very short everywhere. And we were going through clouds of very fine dust, so much so that sometimes the vehicles got stuck in the... We still had a few vehicles left, stuck in the dust. It was very hard going indeed. We were hammered all the way back, alternatively, by the Japanese Air Force, who kept flying out on the horizon, a single zero with its wheels down. And sadly, by the AVG and the Royal Air Force, which was one of the most terrifying experiences, as tomahawks and fighters, multiple gun fighters coming screaming down, machine gunning. And it's absolutely devastating. It was certainly not the fault of the RAF. It was again a box up communications. The RAF had been told that the Japanese were coming through the jungle trace, whilst we were coming round in reasonable comfort round the coast road, and that they had to have an all-out attack on the people coming down the jungle trace to make quite certain that we got round the road back to the Sitang Bridge before the Jap did. And of course they got it wrong. I knew one of the air liaison officers, and he told me later on that some of the pilots were coming back reporting that it looked like British transport. Well, the answer to that was it probably was British transport, which had been captured in Malaya and shoved in through Thailand. But it was the most awful experience. And the terrible thing is that it does lead to one fighting against the other. I mean, we did shoot down the odd British fighter because one has to defend oneself. It's something that was not talked about much afterwards, but it's coming out more and more now. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to great friend of mine, Duke of York's have just unveiled a painting of the Sitang Bridge battle, which is one of their battle honours. And an old chum of mine from Third Gurkhas and I went up for the unveiling. And this question of the hammering we got from the Air Force is clearly something that is being talked about now.
Did the aircraft cause any casualty to your troops?
Oh, yes. Very heavy casualties. The one company, C Company, which was detached, they lost a very valuable Gurkha officer, a chap called Jabri Pun. They lost all their mules. This sort of concentrated automatic fire just cuts things to pieces. It cuts mules in halves. It obliterates them. It's a terrifying thing. But there you are. It's history, and it's the sort of thing that happens. You see, there again, the communications, the radios that we went in, whilst they worked to an extent on the frontier, I think they were old 18 sets, they were completely blanketed by the jungle. We had no powerful sets. Army headquarters in the rear, government of the country, nobody could communicate except by civil telephone. And you could ring through. We had one ridiculous state of affairs when what we called a tactical train had been given the wrong set of instructions, and instead of stopping where it was supposed to stop to pick up our troops and lift them back, it rumbled through the front line and it went down to a station which I think was called Tatoon. And it's the astonishment of... Actually, I think Div headquarters was near the railway line. To the astonishment of Div headquarters, instead of the train stopping at the headquarters, it disappeared through the Japanese lines and carried on. And nobody knew what to do. And somebody almost facetiously suggested ringing up Tatoon Station. And they rang up Tatoon Station, and it was answered by a browned-off British other rank who was sitting on a kit bag on the platform all on his own. Everybody else had gone. And he was told when the train arrived to bring it back again. That's exactly what happened. And it was never touched by the Japanese. You've got to remember, we were in thick country and we were operating over very big distances with very limited numbers of troops. problems caused by communication were unbelievable. They were eased when the 7th Hussars and 2nd Tanks came in from the Western Desert. That's the old Desert Rats, 7th Armoured Brigade. They had honey tanks. And whilst the in many areas in Burma, the use of tanks of that sort was very valuable, but very limited, one of their major assets was the fact that their radios worked and we could communicate. If you've got tanks near you, you could talk to other people who've got tanks near them. And it did form some form of chain of command. Otherwise, there was no communication except by runner. At a very early stage, we went to Burma with our charges. We were still having officers ride between units carrying messages on horses, ridiculous as it seems.
I don't quite see how this incident where you got cut off and rescued by the Gurkha NCO fits into the narrative. Where does that fit in?
Well, that's right back at the Bilin River.
How did that happen? Can you describe what your memories of that are?
Yeah, that's way back. That's right at the start, that first counterattack. When the Japanese came back at us, we were actually in a bend of the river or one of the dry water courses. And the Jap boats, they came in between my left-hand platoon and the centre of the line. And we had a hand-to-hand, close-range battle with him. And at some stage in that battle, I think I was slightly on my own, and I was on the edge of a nullah, and I had a Jap or two round me with automatics, and I had to go somewhere, and the only way was into the nullah. And I went into the nullah. It was a dry nullah bed. I don't know what I hit when I went in, because that's when, although I was physically capable of walking and that sort of thing, I can't. I was concussed, and I don't really remember it. But apparently, the Japs were pushed back at that point, and Dunlop got down through or under fire to me and got me back, cut my pack off, and got me back up onto the top of the nullah. Where I'm told I reassumed command of the company, but that is a blank period in my life. What? We know later on that I'd suffered that in that thing. I suffered a very severe injury, bottom of the spine, which had apparently caused the effect of concussion. That's a long story. I got away with it for years, and finally I lost the use of my legs in 1953, and I had to be flown home and have all sorts of things done inside my spine, but I've been very lucky.
What were the Japanese like in the hand-to-hand fighting?
Oh, they're rough. You've got to remember that the Japanese, the whole of the time I spent in the war with Japan,